Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now Stanford University economist Paul Oyer with his new book, Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating. Professor Oyer, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And this is both economics lessons from the search for love and dating tips from an economist's mindset.
I think it's more the first than the second, but there's a little bit of the second as well, yes.
So more economics lessons from the search for love.
I think I would order it in that direction, yeah. I mean, you can certainly learn useful things from economics for dating, too.
So to make the segue from the last segment, which I don't know if you were listening to.
I was, yeah,
about the equal pay for equal work. Is there a lesson from online dating that we can take from that?
Well,
can apply to creating a more economically equal workplace? I realize I'm putting you on the spot here, something that's not in your book.
Yeah. Well, it's okay that it's not in my book. I don't think I have a great answer to that. I'll tell you one thing that relates to both the last call and this one. That's what I was and my book that I was thinking about, and that is men appear to have an interesting preference where they like women. So it's well documented that men care very much about how women look, and they care a little bit about how much money they make. So all else equal, men would prefer women who make more as partners. But that's only up to a point. There's a very interesting recent study by some economists, two of whom are at the University of Chicago, showing that if you have a relationship where the woman makes more money than the man, that suddenly puts a lot of strain on the relationship and makes the probability of breakup or divorce or unhappiness much higher.
Oh, right. And I think I noted that was in your book. And that could be partly cultural because we have certain expectations, men do, that women are going to be somehow more subservient is exactly the right word, but somehow inferior in the earnings category and dependent on men to make a living, that there's this male provider thing that's kind of culturally pretty baked in at this point. And at the same time, women expect that too to some degree and might look down on the men that they're with if they are making more money than the men. But it also pertains, and I think this is what you wrote about, to the greater ability of women to be independent. And if they don't like a relationship, to actually have the freedom to leave it, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. I mean, the power, if you will, within relationships has changed over time. I mean, the last segment put a very interesting highlight on the fact that women still don't make as much money as men in many contexts. But on the other hand, I think if you look at the trends, you'd be very bullish on women in the labor market. So women have come a long way in the labor market. And I think if you look at the future, you have pretty good reason to think they're going to do even better. And yeah, as a result, that means in relationships, you see a lot more single women having children and so forth, because who needs a man these days when, you know, they can earn just as much? Men are less attached to the labor force than they used to be. So I'm certainly not advocating a dissolution of the traditional family, but economics is one of the many forces behind the change in how often you see two parent families.
So how do you think this affects online dating?
Well, it affects – that's a good question. You definitely see differences in preferences between men and women and the types of things they're looking for online. So if you take a typical 30-year-old woman, she's probably a little more focused on a long-term relationship than a 30-year-old man. And that's, again, driven by economics to a large degree. Some other differences drive that.
And biological clocks?
Biological clocks, the fact that over, you know, men live, there's also just a simple, to use the economics terminology, there's a simple supply and demand thing going on where men don't live as long. So as they age, men become much more in demand. So, you know, you're as a 50-year-old man, you're a lot better off than as a 30-year-old man in the market as it were.
You also wrote about aging that it's counterintuitive, but older people on dating sites tend to be more picky, not less picky, than younger people on dating sites. Want to talk about that?
No, actually, I think my claim is that they should be less picky. that older people should be less picky. So then the other point, and this might be what you're thinking of, is that older people tend to be more picky in other contexts. So let me lay that out a little bit.
Go ahead, please.
Idea in economics called search theory, and it was pioneered by, among others, a guy named Dale Mortensen, a wonderful economist at Northwestern who just died last week, unfortunately. And the idea is very simple. It's that, look, I have to, when I go to buy something, or in the case of online dating, when I go to look for something that I really want and value, I have to trade off the fact that if I keep looking, I might find one that better fits my needs. But on the other hand, I have other things I need to do. And so if you think about, if you take that very seriously, if you take a young person, they have a lot longer to get that right. And so they have more incentive to be pickier when choosing a mate. Whereas, you know, a guy like me, I'm 50, or somebody even older, if we waste a lot of time sort of trying to find the perfect mate, well, you know, we've kind of ruined, we've wasted away a lot of the time we were going to spend with that mate. So by that argument, as you get older, when looking for a mate, you should get less choosy. Now, by the same token, what's for sure empirically true is that as people get older, they become more picky in other forms of shopping. So old people get better prices than young people on various products. And of course, some of that is senior discounts and things like that. But another big thing that's going on there is retired people, in addition to maybe not having as much disposable income, also have more time on their hand to shop around and look for a better deal. And there's a couple of economists who've done very careful studies. They don't follow old people around, I'm happy to report. They use various other survey methods. And, you know, it's very clear that people in their 60s and 70s are getting a much better deal on average when buying things than I am, and certainly than my, you know, somebody in their 30s is.
But on the dating market, they're considered less desirable in general, right?
Yeah, they are. They are. And so there's no question about that. As you age, you become you become less desirable, and you should be more, like I said, you're going to be more impatient. So
those are the trends.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
listeners, if you want online dating tips from an economist, now's your chance. 212-433-WNYC.
No better way to make the phone lines go dead than that line.
Well, we'll find out. I'm not convinced of that. Think of this as how the number crunching side of your brain might help you find happiness on the other side of your brain. 212-433-9692. Or we can flip the script and you can add to his narrative of how your experience in the dating world helps you understand economics. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You have an equation in the book. Match.com equals a mall. Uh-huh. Facebook equals a party. Explain.
Yeah. So before there was online dating, there was an idea. Before there was any online markets, there was forever. There's been a concept in economics called network externalities. And so normally, when you go to buy a product, demand for that product is driven by two things. It's the features of the product and the price. So I'll be more interested in a car that's nicer, and I will be more interested in if the price is lower. Network externalities are a product where demand creates demand, and Facebook is the perfect example of this. The only reason people use Facebook is because people use Facebook. And so in the old days, before we had the internet, the equivalent of that was a party. The only reason people go to some parties is because other people are at those parties. Or the only reason people will go to certain other fora is because other people are there. So there are certain situations where crowds lead to more crowds. Now, an online dating site is a type of network externality which has what we call indirect network effects. So at least in the heterosexual sites, the men on Match.com are all want to go to Match.com and they want to pick a site that's very crowded, but only because the women are there. Ideally, I'd like to have all the other men on Match.com drop off if I were still on Match.com. But that doesn't happen. And because if they did, if all the other men went away, then all the women would go away too. So it ends up being kind of like Facebook, but you're drawn to this world where your competitors are there as well. And everybody thinks when they hear stories like that, oh, that's an internet-only type of thing. But of course it's not. The bazaar in Istanbul works exactly the same way. That's this huge marketplace. And the only reason sellers go there is because the buyers know to go there. And the only reason the buyers go there is because the sellers know to go there. So this is an idea that's very crucial to thinking about certain types of demand, where demand creates demand rather than good prices or something creating demand.
And so for people who want to start a business, since ultimately this is a book about economics more than about dating, you conclude that it's easier for a new online dating company to get some traction than a new social network. Why is
that?
Well, because the
idea I just suggested there says, look, in order for Google Plus, for example, to try to take over from Facebook, they need a bunch of people and all their friends to simultaneously move from Facebook to Google Plus. That's a very difficult thing. But for an online dating site to come in, people are A, willing to try multiple dating sites because I just want to be where a lot of people are. On a dating site, I don't want to be where my friends are. In fact, I'd rather not be where my friends are. I don't want anybody to see my face on a dating site who knows me from other contexts. Now, it's still very hard. These network externalities are very important. So Match.com and eHarmony, they have a huge advantage from the fact that they're big and new people are going to go to the bigger sites. But if I were a dating site with some sort of new thing, I'd be able to break in better than if I were a new social network with some sort of new idea. OkCupid's a great idea. They broke into this market very successfully, even after Match.com and some of the others were big, because they brought an innovative idea to the market, and you could still do that. And in social networking, I think, frankly, it's just kind of really hard, almost too late to do that.
Linda in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering, I was on hold, and I couldn't hear the show for a while, so... as far as Match.com goes, I was wondering how your guest could talk about marketing yourself on a site like this, because when you're a woman in your 50s, early 50s, and you see these men who post pictures of themselves in bathing suits, and
who are also in their 50s
or older. And, you know, that's not how I want to shop. And that's not the kind of bargain I want as a woman who's not 30. So I'm just wondering, you know, I would like someone with a sense of humor. I'm not interested in a gym rat who's just showing off. So I'm wondering, from an economic point of view, how your guest would talk about marketing oneself.
All right.
On a site like that.
Interesting. So there may be a mismatch. If there are a lot of Lindas out there, Professor, between the product information that they're receiving, 60-year-old men in bathing suits, and the product that Linda at least is shopping for.
Right. For the record, I'm 50, and when I was still doing online dating, I didn't have any pictures in my bathing suit. But that's another story. Women in their early 50s, I'm not going to tell you to do this, Linda, but I will tell you that a lot of women in their early 50s are listing themselves as 48 or 49. So I'm not suggesting this is the way you should market yourself, but one thing you should keep in mind is a lot of women in your position, that is how they're marketing themselves. The amount of lying, so how are people marketing themselves on dating sites? Often not completely truthfully, so they shade the truth, and especially early 50s women often will list themselves as late 40s. The other piece
but
of
I
advice
think her,
I would...
Her problem didn't seem to be that
right.
She thought she was not marketable, but that
right.
The men were not to her taste.
Right. So that's the part I was going to get to next, and that is you have to – I would advise you to invest a fair amount of time letting the software help you. So if you spend quite a bit of time on Match.com or any big website sort of rating the men and saying, I don't want this one, I do want – you know, I'm – and making it very clear the types you're interested in, if that site software is what it should be, over time you should start seeing more of the men who are the types you're at least interested in talking to. It doesn't mean you're going to find the perfect one right away. So I would try to let the software help you, and I would try to maybe use multiple sites and try to see which ones are better at adopting to the preferences that you show. Over time, I think the dating sites that are going to do the best are going to be the ones who figure out how to get the software right to figure out quickly, hey, Linda doesn't want these guys in bathing suits or gym rats or whatever, and to be able to show her, because Match.com has thousands of guys. They can find 10 or 20 who meet her requirements if they can get their software to figure out her preferences.
Linda, good luck out there. John on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. You have a question?
Yeah. In regards to Match.com also now, I'm over 50, a bit over 50, and I went on the site just for kind of like fun, but I get these emails from them with pictures of women and stuff like that. And when I look at their profiles, what I find is a lot of these women over 50, some of them, 55 and above, they're requesting guys, when they get to the salary part, they're requesting guys with $150,000 salaries, $200,000 salaries. But you're saying that you want to, your availability is for men up to like 60, 65. I mean, what are they really looking for? Because when I see that, I immediately close their profile and look for other things, because if you're looking for that at that age, I don't really understand it.
John, thank you. Well, it's interesting, Professor. We have Linda, who thinks that too many men out there are concerned about muscles, or think women are going to be concerned about muscles, and John, who's finding that too many women are concerned about income.
Right. So empirically, John,
they're both in their 50s. So I don't know what's going on in their 50s, but it seems like if these callers are an indication of something, people are all scrambled in what they're looking for and what's available.
Well, I don't know that we can draw a broad inference on the scrambled part, but I definitely think both of these things, both callers are sort of getting at important trends. John's right. Women, on average, and this is not, it's going to take him a fair amount of time to sort through looking for women who don't feel this way. But on average, women are interested in men who make more money. I mean, that's just a fact. It's true in the United States. It's true in Korea. It's true, those are some data points I've seen. It's true everywhere. Now, by the same token, men are interested in how women look. And I think Linda is probably picking up on the idea that men care very much about how women look, and I think some of them probably falsely assume that women care more than they do. They care about how men look, but they probably falsely assume that women care more than they actually do about how men look. And so she's probably running it. I would say that's the thing where I'd be most worried about people misperceiving things. John's, but both of them are going to have to invest, unfortunately, in a little bit more effort.
You did note to Linda, by the way, and I see this in the book, that horror of horrors, I'm shocked. People lie on dating sites. One gender more than the other, as far as you is it measured?
No, different things. They to my knowledge, it's not that one gender lies more than the other. They lie about different things. Men lie about their height. If you go on, OkCupid is a big website. They did their own internal study, and they found if you take the fraction of men on their site who report being exactly 6 feet tall, it's not a possible. It's just not remotely possible. So a lot of men will shade their height up a few inches. Women, as I mentioned, are more likely to shade their age down, although men do that as well. And then incomes. Men shade their incomes up. Now, you can't – the reason this is economics is that when people lie – for the most part, they rationally lie. They follow what an economist would call a cheap talk model, where they're thinking, okay, I want to appeal to this person, so I want to shade my age or whatever. But they can't go too far, because if you're Linda said she was in her early 50s. If somebody in their early 50s says they're 36, that's not going to work. The first date, you show up and the person will inevitably have some sort of emergency and have to leave immediately.
Believable lies, not the emergency-generating lies. All right, last thing, and we're just about out of time, with Stanford economics professor Paul Oyer, who has written, "Everything I Ever Needed to Know About Economics I Learned from Online Dating." And on that premise of everything you know what I really need to know? I need to know which is better for national economic growth, austerity or a tax hike with a jobs program. Can I learn that from OkCupid?
Okay, you caught me. I really, you know, the title's long enough, but it really should say everything I ever needed to know about microeconomics. Uh-huh. And you've asked me a macroeconomics question. The title was long enough already, but so you caught me.
It's a common trap that married policy wonks fall into. Okay, Paul Oyer, everything I ever needed to know about economics, I learned microeconomics. I learned from online dating. Thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thanks a lot, Brian.